The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, friends. This is Larry Wilson for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Money Matters. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you articles of interest from Kiplinger Personal Finance and Money.com. Our first article from Kiplinger.com, how to get a refund on your water bill if you have a leak. Refunds for water leaks are available from municipalities if you report and fix the problem. Sometimes water doesn't just go down the drain. It leaks, and you have to pay for water you've never used. The Environmental Protection Agency, or EPA, estimates that the average household's leaks can account for more than 10,000 gallons of water wasted every year. Did you know you can recover some of that ill-spent money? Here's how. Water utility agencies across the United States, through goodwill policies or because of government regulations, offer customers a way to recover money they lose when a toilet runs, a lawn sprinkling system bursts, a pipe leaks, and other scenarios that cause money to needlessly fall through your hands, like water. Depending on your utility's policy, you could recover all or some of that lost money. You may be able to seek leak refunds only one time once or twice every 12 months or once every 2 years. It's something the larger utilities are willing to do in an effort to maintain good relations with their customers, said Deidre Mueller, public affairs manager of the Denver-based American Water Works Association, a trade group representing 3,500 of the nation's metropolitan water providers. I suspect smaller utilities are less likely to do this simply because their financial situations tend to be a bit tighter. Many utilities do offer refunds. We found many water utilities, large and small in the United States, that have either mandated water leak adjustment policies or ways for customers to submit courtesy leak adjustment claims. It's really a public benefit, particularly here in California with the drought we have, says John Tang, Vice President of Government Relations and Corporate Communications at San Jose Water Company. It's an incentive to try to motivate customers to fix a leak. To recover one-time water losses, contact the agency's customer service department or fill out a form on the agency's website. Proof of repair must be submitted, a plumber's bill or receipts for parts purchased by the homeowner, or some municipalities use meter readings. The New York City Water Department doesn't require written proof if the property is hooked up to an automated meter reader, or AMR. The utility then will reimburse some percentage of the coverage of the overage caused by the leak in that month. The utility will review the last month's bills to measure the extent of the overage in the month when the leak occurred. And the leak location also matters. The location of the leak can impact the amount of refund you are eligible to receive. Some leaks are categorized as underground or an outdoor leak that does not go into the sewer system, or a leak that does go into the sewer system, such as a toilet leak. City of Concord Water Resources in Concord, North Carolina, takes a proactive approach by automatically enrolling customers in its water loss protection program. It costs about 50 cents per month. The program provides a 100% leak adjustment one time over a 24-month period. Customers can opt out, But if they choose not to participate in the program and then end up seeking a leak adjustment later on, it won't be provided. The Buford Jasper Water and Sewer Authority serves 70,946 customers in the Lowcountry region of South Carolina. In the past 12 months, we have refunded over 600 accounts for leak adjustments, Pamela Flash, Director of Public Affairs, told Kiplinger. She added that the most common is a toilet leak from a faulty flapper or chain. Also, broken hoses and pipes from extreme cold weather, aging pipes, and digging or hitting the pipes are common. This water authority found a smart way to track leaks and alert customers. It has offered customers the use of an app called Eye on Water. The app lets customers connect to their utility accounts and allows them to see how much water they're using and, most importantly, can alert users to possible leaks on their property. In an area with a lot of vacation homes, it's especially helpful, Flash said, because the app can alert homeowners anywhere their smartphones work. Thousands of homeowners across the country take advantage of such policies every year. Denver Water, for example, had 1,290 claims in 2021 and 1,786 claims in 2022, Jimmy Luthi, media relations coordinator, told Kiplinger. West Virginia American Water provides what it calls a priority leak adjustment that covers only hidden leaks, said Laura Jordan, external affairs manager. That's part of the agency's policy as mandated by the state's Public Service Commission. Typically, it's most often a service line or plumbing in the wall with a leak not detected until the customer gets their next water bill and sees exceptionally high usage, Jordan said. So if you simply have a leaky toilet in the Mountain State, you're on your own regarding that water and money going down the drain. And the bottom line on how to get a refund for a leak? Household leaks can waste more than 1 trillion gallons annually nationwide, according to the EPA. That's equal to the annual household water used of more than 11 million homes. Some of the most common types of water loss are toilet leaks, hot water tank leaks, and broken pipes. When you have a leak, promptly and properly repair the leak. This will put you in the best position to seek and receive a refund of the wasted water. Adjustments are typically made once the water authority can confirm that the leak has been repaired and consumption is back to normal. And from Money.com, waiting for lower interest rates? We have bad news. Hoping for cheaper credit card and mortgage rates this year? Bad news. The Federal Reserve effectively ruled that cutting rates until when or if President Donald Trump and Congress come up with a policy roadmap that will not drive higher inflation. Unfortunately, trade policy, largely centered around levying tariffs on potentially everything from steel to smartphones, would have the opposite effect, economists warn. Minutes from the Federal Reserve's January meeting, released on Wednesday, show that policymakers are largely in a wait-and-see mode. Officials remarked on the current high degree of uncertainty around the future trajectory of inflation. This stems in part from not knowing how the economic effects of potential government policies would play out. Given the potential risk that those policies present to an economy in which inflation is already too high, officials effectively said they would watch and wait. Barring a spike in the unemployment rate, officials said they would want to see further progress on inflation before making additional adjustments to the target range for the federal funds rate. While no rate movement is the most likely outcome, the wording of the minutes makes it clear that if inflation heats up again, the Fed's next move could be a hike. Already, inflation figures for 2025 have turned in a couple of unexpected and unwelcome surprises. The overall consumer price index, or CPI, a closely watched inflation figure, came in higher than experts anticipated for January. Likewise, core inflation also jumped higher than expected, rising 3.3% over the past year. And tariffs could push prices even higher. In a December report, the Peterson Institute for International Economics calculated that the combined impact of the new administration's tariff and immigration policies, plus the president's stated desire to exert more influence over the central bank, would cause inflation to rise to between 6% and 9.3% by 2026. At the high end, this forecast eclipses even the four-decade high inflation reached in June of 2022, when the CPI hit 9.1%. In terms of the real-world impact, the think tank says this translates to consumer prices that are up to 28% higher by the final year of President Trump's term compared to the present day. What's more, the annual inflation rate would stay much higher for longer, clocking in at 4%, twice as high as the Fed's 2% target, all the way through 2040. Expected retaliatory tariffs slapped on U.S. exports to other countries could also make things even worse. This doesn't paint a great picture for interest rate cuts. The Peterson Institute found that tariffs on just China, Mexico, and Canada could cost the average American family as much as $1,200 annually, and these don't even include Trump's plan for sweeping reciprocal tariffs on U.S. trading partners more broadly. This suggests that policymakers would have little appetite for cuts, according to Peter Petrie, professor emeritus of international finance at Brandeis University. The Fed is following the only defendable course: stay put until real actions or tangible changes in data reveal the directions of policy, he says via email. Expectations for cuts this year have already diminished considerably in recent months. The combination of a robust labor market and stubbornly elevated inflation has given policymakers pause. As recent as a month ago, Wall Street thought there was roughly a 1 in 4 probability that the Fed would lower rates at its next meeting in March. According to the CME Fed Watch tool, which uses futures market activity to forecast the market's rate expectations, there was a 27% likelihood of a March rate cut on January the 17th. As of Thursday, that probability had dwindled to just 2.5%. Even Fed's officials have been readjusting their expectations. In the most recent projection published in December, the most likely assumption was for rates to be just 0.5 percentage point lower than their current rate by the end of the year. By contrast, just 3 months prior to that, most officials expected to end 2025 with the Fed funds rate either 1 or 1.25 percentage points lower than its current level. Last month, Bank of America researchers made waves with a forecast that the Fed would keep its benchmark federal funds rate at its current range of 4.25% to 4.5%, rather than the 2 rate cuts the bank had predicted earlier. And which direction will rates go next? Now, with the threat of tariff-fueled inflation growing, That's not even the worst-case scenario for a country already coping with a combination of sticker shock and higher borrowing costs on everything from mortgages to credit cards. If inflation rises further, the Fed could be in the position of having to throw cold water on the economy to cool it by implementing a rate hike. While that scenario remains an outlier, market observers say it's definitely on the table. Dominic Pallilardo, chief multi-asset strategist at Morningstar Investment Management, called the possibility a worst-case scenario in a recent report. He added, though, that if January's inflation data turns out to be the norm rather than the exception to the rule, that situation could possibly bring rate hikes back into play. Atlanta Fed President Raphael Bostic warned earlier this month that if Trump wages as a protracted, multifaceted trade war, the upshot could be a higher inflation expectation. Inflation expectations, which are already creeping up, present a risk because they can snowball into a feedback loop called a wage price spiral. That's what happened in the 1970s, which makes inflation especially hard to stamp out. To be sure, not everyone is worried about the potential inflation hit tariffs could deliver. Fed Governor Christopher J. Waller said in a speech Monday that he expects the inflationary impact of tariffs to be short-lived and mitigated by other policies Trump and congressional Republicans have prioritized, such as lowering taxes and rolling back regulations. He also held out hope that lower interest rates might be in the cards for this year as well. If 2025 plays out like 2024, rate cuts would be appropriate at some point this year, he said. And from Kiplinger.com, Kiplinger Retail Outlook. A spending pause in January is likely temporary. Retail sales pull back in January after a strong December, but may not be out of gas yet. Retail sales declined 0.9% in January, most likely for two reasons. First, snowstorms in parts of the country and wildfires in California may have dampened shopping. Second, spending had been strong in December and was revved up with this month's report, so consumers may have been catching their breath after splurging ahead of the holidays. Motor vehicle sales in November and December were certainly unsustainably strong, for instance. They dropped 2.8% in January, but remain 1% above their October level. Sales of furniture, clothing, and sporting goods also declined after a jump in December. E-commerce sales dropped 2% in January, though sales of general merchandise rose 0.5%. Restaurant sales had a good month, rising 0.9%. Consumer spending on services excluding restaurants rose a moderately strong 0.6% in December, rebounding from a weak November. December is the latest month for which services spending data are available. Spending on services has been pretty consistent, with 0.5% to 0.6% increases in 8 of the previous 9 months. This consistency is expected to continue, given that disposable income has been growing at better than 5% annually since the late 2022. Consumers may not be pulling back yet, and retail spending in 2025 could still be decent. But uncertainties abound. A new administration with new policies is taking effect. The Federal Reserve has likely stopped cutting interest rates for a while. A gradually cooling labor market could eventually cause consumers to think about boosting their savings instead of shopping more. The savings rate is running at a meager 4.4% currently, but that low level may not last long. However, don't expect any sudden pickup in saving and accompanying decline in spending. That only occurs when unemployment rises sharply and consumers start worrying about losing their jobs. But saving rates have been lower than in historical than the historical norm and may begin to rise slowly, which would cut into cash available to support future retail spending. Still, high interest rates on consumer loans will likely continue to dampen lower-income households' spending power, too. And again, from Kiplinger.com, emergency funds can reduce stress. Your savings can bail you out of a situation you may not think of as an emergency. A growing number of Americans are struggling to cover unexpected expenses, highlighting the need for emergency savings. According to Bankrate's 2024 Emergency Savings Report, only 44% of U.S. adults could afford a $1,000 emergency expense using their savings, while 25% have no emergency savings at all. This financial vulnerability leaves many relying on credit cards, loans, or cutting back on other essentials when faced with unexpected cost. Building an emergency fund is one of the most effective ways to reduce financial stress and avoid debt. Even setting aside small amounts consistently can help create a financial cushion, making it easier to handle life surprises without jeopardizing long-term financial goals. If I lost my job tomorrow, I would be devastated, but I know I could survive for a few months without a paycheck. Over the past few years, I've accumulated a stash of cash in a savings account and left it alone. I haven't had any financial disasters serious enough for me to drain my cachet, but I feel calmer knowing the money is there. An emergency fund can come to your rescue, not only if you lose your job, but also if you have an unexpected medical bill or an urgent home or car repair. It can also bail you out of a situation that you may not think of as an emergency, but affects your mental health or professional growth. For example, you may decide to break the lease on an apartment because of a bad roommate situation, or quit a toxic job even though you have nothing else lined up. Get started. Millennials who are juggling everyday expenses, student or other debt and retirement account contributions may be hard-pressed to see the importance of preparing for some unknown future plight. But without an emergency fund, when a sudden expense does crop up, you may need to deplete your retirement savings or investments, skip bill payments, or carry a balance on your credit card to pay for it, and any of those could ding your financial future. Financial planners usually recommend setting aside from 3 to 6 months worth of essential living expenses, including rent or mortgage payments, health insurance, transportation, and groceries. If you have a stable job, are debt-free, and could move in with friends or back home in a pinch, you might be comfortable saving less. A spouse or partner's income is another safety net. If you have children, a mortgage, or lots of debt, or you earn an irregular income as a freelancer or small business owner, you should lock down enough capital to last 6 months or more. Of course, this may mean that your emergency fund should have thousands of dollars, but you don't need to stockpile that amount all at once, especially if you're paying down loans or beefing up your 401k. Pam Capilad, certified financial planner in New York City and founder of Brunch and Budget, recommends focusing on a smaller amount, such as 1 month's worth of living expenses. After that, work on debt while gradually contributing to your emergency fund. If you're feeling really stretched, keep at least $1,000 in your emergency fund at all times to bail you out of minor crises. Otherwise, the cycle of debt will continue, Capilad says. The easiest place to keep your emergency fund is in an FDIC-insured high-yield savings or money market deposit account. Kiplinger's Best Banks for Millennials, Ally Bank, and Discover Bank both offer savings accounts that have no monthly fees or minimum balance requirements. Need more motivation? Save for a feeling, not for a thing, says Capilad. Having this fund means that if something unexpected comes up, you can grieve or be emotionally without stressing about the financial side or feeling stuck. If it helps, rename your emergency fund something more positive, such as a yes fund or an opportunity fund, says Capilad. It gives you the ability to say, yes, I can buy new tires for my car, or yes, I can take advantage of this once in a lifetime opportunity. And as we finish out our episode today, a couple of helpful tips regarding car insurance. The average cost by credit score. In 47 states, a bad credit score can raise your premium. If your score is poor, get quotes from multiple carriers, including those writing high-risk policy, advises Bankrate's Shannon Martin. For average, the rate on car insurance, $2,543 if you have an average credit score, versus if you have a poor score, it could be $4,261. That's definitely a large difference there. And car owners who shop for insurance at least once in the past year, newly retired, driving fewer miles, tell your insurer, says Douglas Heller of the Consumer Federation of America, you might get a lower rate. And around 41% of car owners did shop again for new insurance during the past year. Well, we are out of time again for today's episode of Money Matters. Thank you for joining us, and until next time, this is Larry Wilson. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving our community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Money Matters is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please give us a call, 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thanks again for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.